Welcome to the Racing Post Bloodstock Top Lot podcast, brought to you in association with Irish Thoroughbred Marketing. From the Cheltenham Festival to the Melbourne Cup, Irish Thoroughbreds will take you to the top. Irish Thoroughbred Marketing is your all-access pass to the world-leading Irish racing industry. Visit itm.ie to source your Irish champion. I'm Martin Stevens, here with the Racing Post sale correspondent, James Thomas, and later on we'll be joined by Inform Bloodstock agent Ed Sackville. But first, hello James, how are you?
I'm very good, Martin, how are you?
Yeah, fine. I take it you've had a very hectic week because of the death of Galileo announced on Saturday?
Yes, I mean it was an event that we obviously knew would come at some point, but when the news broke that he'd been euthanized at Coolmore, it was still a little bit of a bombshell, and I mean, given the scale of his achievements over the last number of years, it's been a bit of a monumental task trying to sum up and do justice to a horse who's basically achieved it all and has completely reshaped the breed and the landscape of stallions in Britain and Ireland and is over the course of his stud career. I mean, yeah, it's been full on, but I mean, hopefully we've done him justice.
Yes, yeah, so I've been enjoying reading all your tributes. When you look back over them and after all the research you've done, what do you draw out of it as the thing that made Galileo quite so special?
It's interesting, isn't it? I think for a horse as good as him, it's very hard to pin down just the one thing that made him so good. I mean, I think it's been interesting reading tributes from the likes of Aidan O'Brien, who obviously trained the horse himself and has trained so many of his progeny, and Shane Heffernan, who rode the horse on the race course and in his work, and has obviously ridden a large number of his sons and daughters on the racetrack as well. I know those sorts of individuals have spoken of this real unbelievable will to win, and an attitude that you just don't see in most horses, a real willingness and a genuineness. And, for them, that's what set him apart, which, you know, having never sat on any of his progeny myself, I wouldn't be best placed to comment. But, I mean, you know, from my point of view, looking at him, his record is just absolutely phenomenal. I mean, to have sired 92 group/grade 1 winners, to be the dam sire of 34 top level winners, 12 champion sire crowns, got 20 sons at stud who've sired a group 1 winner themselves, he's sired 338 stakes winners and counting as well. These are just absolutely phenomenal statistics. I mean, you just don't see these kind of numbers produced by one single stallion, you know, or ever. I mean, you know, these are records that stand apart from his peers and stack up particularly well historically. And, you know, it could be a very long time until we see the likes of his again.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the other really important part about Galileo is his versatility. Obviously, it goes without saying he's a fantastic conduit of class. You know, he was a very, very good Derby winner and King George winner himself, by Sab as well as Out of Urban Sea. So he was always entitled to pass on that class. But he was just so adaptable to breeders as well. And people soon realised that you could send him a fast mare and be able to get a champion and relatively early summer two-year-old who could turn into a champion two-year-old and then become a classic winning miler and a top miler as well. We saw that obviously most clearly through Frankel. And the other strange thing about him was, I think, he just put in so much class and will to win that even if you sent him a mare very early on in his career, he received the mare Alleluia, who I think won the Doncaster Cup over something like 2 mile 4 furlongs. And usually, you know, if you say send a 2 mile 4 furlong mare to a Derby winner, you'd be thinking you'd be getting a chaser out of it. But it still produced a group 1 winner on the flat in Allegretto. So just extraordinarily versatile.
I think as well as versatile, I would throw in consistent as well. I mean, to have been at stud for as long as he did and to keep just churning out year in, year out, group 1 winner after group 1 winner. And as you say, having worked so well with such a broad spectrum of mares, from sprinters and milers and middle distance mares and stayers, it got to the stage where, you know, despite racing and breeding being an industry and a sport that's thoroughly unpredictable, he almost reached a level of predictability where you just knew that year in, year out, there was going to be this sort of constant supply chain of, you know, top level talents. It's just really uncommon, you know, notwithstanding the opportunities he's got, but he just was able to keep going and keep consistently producing that kind of talent, you know, every, you know, day in, day out, basically. I mean, his achievements have sort of almost redefined what seems possible for one horse to achieve, really. I mean, there's lots of good, very good, capable stallions standing at the moment, and you know, their records are just absolutely dwarfed in comparison to him, because he's just operating completely in a league of his own.
Yeah, and I think that might be a mistake that people have possibly made in the last week or so, when they've been talking about Galileo's legacy and they're casting around for an heir to Galileo. And I think the simple truth is there just won't be one. He was irreplaceable, and so was Sadler's Wells, really. He was irreplaceable, but Cornwall were extraordinarily lucky, and the wider breeding world was extraordinarily lucky for lightning to strike twice, for these amazing, consistent breed-shaping stallions to come one after another at Cornwall and in the paternal line. And that's not going to happen in the near future, quite clearly. I mean, Frankel is probably Galileo's most credible heir, and he is a fantastic stallion, but he is not quite yet up to his father's standards.
No, I think that's fair to say, isn't it? I mean, when you look into your crystal ball, where do you see the landscape of breeding and racing being in the next sort of 5-10 years, you know, any era we could sort of term the post-Galileo phase?
Well, I think some people have spoken about the death of Galileo as if it is going to be like the Ravens leaving the Tower of London, that this will somehow precipitate the fall of the Cornwall Empire. I don't think it's going to be anything like that. It's, of course, an enormous loss because of everything we've just said about Galileo, because he was so consistent, passed down so much class, was so versatile, he passed down that will to win. But we have to remember there was life before Galileo at Cornwall, and for Aidan O'Brien. You know, Aidan is a masterful trainer, and he was well able to train Group 1 winners before Galileo arrived on the scene by sires such as Woodman, King Mambo, Danehill, Danehill Dancer, Stormcat, etc. And we probably shouldn't underestimate how much Aidan helped Galileo as much as the other way around, because Aidan is obviously this fantastic trainer with an amazing setup at Ballydoyle with every resource and all the best people working for him. So, you know, some of that will be transferred to the next stallions that Cornwall and Ballydoyle draw on in the post-Galileo era. That's not to say life won't be harder for Aidan O'Brien and Cornwall, of course. It will be much more difficult assembling their classic squadrons from progeny of a wider range of sires, not Galileo, and perhaps that means that classics in 5-6 years' time will have a more democratic look to them, with other trainers and owners providing more of the field. And of course, also in the post-Galileo era, we still have Galileo's daughters. Well, Cornwall certainly do anyway. They have the vast majority of the Group 1 winners and the Group 1 relations and the very well-bred Galileo fillies. And they will upgrade whichever stallions Cornwall choose to support in future. And they have Galileo's sons. Australia and Glen Eagles have done fairly well in the early years. And of course, we still have Churchill, Circus Maximus still to come.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see how all these little symbiotic relationships continue in the future now that Galileo has been taken out of the equation.
Okay, at this point, let's bring in our guest Ed and see what he thinks about Galileo and his legacy. But let me introduce Ed first. Ed learnt his craft at the elbow of renowned expert John Warren and subsequently worked at Cornwall Australia Sidehill Stud and Highcliffe Stud, and was assistant to Hughie Morrison. He was then accepted onto the inaugural Darley Flying Start programme and worked alongside his future business partner, Alistair Donald, at the Kerr Nillingson Association. Ed and Alistair established Sackville Donald around 10 years ago. While Alistair has made a name for himself with the many stars he has bought for Hong Kong, King Power Racing, Kangaroo International, among others, Ed has distinguished himself through his purchases of the champion filly Sky Lantern, top sprinter Labrisa Breeze, All Weather Star Catchy, the Dams of Byrama, Supremacy and the Revenant, and so on. Ed has been in especially good form of late, as Sky Lantern's daughter Snow Lantern has just won the Falmouth Stakes for one set of clients, the Keswick family, while Starman landed the July Cup for another set of clients in David and Sue Ward. Welcome, Ed. How are you?
Very good. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me on the show. It's a pleasure to be here.
No problem. So what, before we get on to Snow Lantern and Starman, what were your thoughts on Galileo and his legacy?
Obviously, it was a huge shame to lose such an iconic horse. I mean, he absolutely has been the has been the stallion of the last 20 years. But I think not just that, he will be a stallion who will be forever remembered in the history of the thoroughbred, an absolute icon. And it's massively exciting that his legacy appears to be continuing through his outstanding son, Frankel, who obviously has just had Hurricane Lane winning incredibly impressively in France.
Yeah, and that brings us neatly to Snow Lantern, who's by Frankel. So congratulations for that last week. Now, there's a funny link between Snow Lantern and Starman in that you managed to buy both Snow Lantern's dam, Sky Lantern, of course, and Starman's dam, Northern Star, during the same session of the Goths Orb yearling sale in 2011. I think they're only about 11 lots apart from each other. And neither of them cost the earth at €75,000 and €50,000. What are your recollections of those fillies that day?
I must admit, first of all, I actually had no idea that I bought the two fillies in the same year, let alone on the same day. I knew they both came from Goths, and Goths is a sale I've actually always been particularly lucky with when buying fillies. And they were quite sort of interesting, the pair of them, because they were both bought for very specific orders. Starting with Sky Lantern, she was obviously bought for Ben Keswick, and at the time we were developing Rockcliffe Stud, and he was looking for a filly who could obviously, firstly, be a racehorse, and then secondly, have the pedigree and the looks to go on to be hopefully a foundation broodmare. I must admit, never in a million years did I think that Sky Lantern would go on to be a classic winner and multiple Group 1 winner, and that she would be the dam of the Group 1 winner. So, God, it's been some story. With Ben, it was, as I say, it was very specific, because not only did he want to have a filly who could go on to become a broodmare, but also he absolutely wanted a speed family. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to try and breed sprinters. So part of the appeal with Sky Lantern was that she was by Red Clubs, who obviously was a fast horse himself, but crucially, he was also an outcross. And as you boys yourself well know, the majority of sprinting horses are from the Danzig, Green Desert, Danehill line. Mm-hmm. I should obviously add in that that's promptly going to change with Starman bringing in a whole new genetic dimension.
That's upon me.
So part of Sky Lantern's appeal was that if she went on to be good and we bred from her, then we'd be able to send her to those Green Desert and Danehill line stallions, and we wouldn't be inbreeding. Another appeal was the fact that she was a half sister to a couple of good sprinters in Shropshire and Hinton Admiral. There's another one on the page. I can't remember which. And so she also Arctic. There we go. That's the horse. Interestingly, actually, I should have known that. Purchased by Alistair in training. I really should have known that one. So she had a very speedy family. She also was a half sister to a horse called Shanty Star, who won the Queen's Vase at Ascot. And I must admit, when I was talking Ben Keswick through the family, I slightly glossed over that one, and we just sort of, you know, failed to mention it. The other thing about Sky Lantern was that she was physically a big, strong filly. You know, she was an imposing, good-looking type. She possibly lacked a bit of action, but she looked like a real sort of tough sort. So that was really the appeal with her. But she does have a lovely female pedigree. She goes back to Negligent and mm-hmm. all of these good horses. So it is a very nice page, and that was a massive appeal. Whereas probably it was the opposite with Northern Star, the dam Starman, who, again, David and Sue Ward, my brief was to buy a filly who could go on to become a broodmare if she was good enough. And Northern Star was a very good looking, very sort of classy filly. She had that sort of slight Monge behind leg and sort of just slightly left it behind her. But other than that, she was a very classy looking, quality individual. Monge, obviously, one of the great, great stallions. Mm-hmm. That was a huge appeal. And she has a nice, she had a nice female pedigree without it being iconic. But having said that, the family has continued to improve since we originally bought her Northern Star. There's a good horse in America only last year was running in the Kentucky Derby races called King Gilmero. Another black type filly called Dorothy B has come up in the family since we bought her. So she certainly had a nice pedigree, but it was really her looks and the fact that she was by Monge, which was the real appeal. She went on to be a winner, but actually, if you look at her race record, Tom Dascombe, who trained her, regarded her highly enough to run her in the Lingfield Oaks trial. So she was, you know, certainly very well regarded at home. I mean, obviously, at Stud has been an unbelievable success. It's just a huge tragedy that she died after her third foal.
Yeah, so what is the latest? Let's start with Sky Lantern, who's at Rockcliffe Stud. What's she got coming through?
She has a Galileo two-year-old in training in Ireland named First Emperor, mm-hmm. who I believe is not far off a run. And, you know, as you can imagine, a Galileo out of Sky Lantern we're incredibly excited about. And then there is a Kingman yearling colt, a Kingman colt foal, and she is back in foal to Frankel. It was it didn't take much working out, deciding to send her back to Frankel.
No, exactly. And I know that, sadly, Northern Star is no with us, but I also know that David and Sue Ward, they have a fair few female relations to her to breed from, don't they?
Yes, we've got a filly called Sunday Star, who was the first progeny from Northern Star. A Kodiak filly. She was well above average. I think she was placed in black type races 7 times, I think. Mm-hmm. Sadly, never quite managed to win one, but tough, consistent, real sort of typical Kodiak, great attitude, you know, really tried, versatile horse. The plan is to send her hopefully to Frankel next year. Yeah. And then we have David and Sue have a Kingman filly called Lodestar, who was an absolute queen of a filly. And after we sadly lost Northern Star and Starman began to look like a superstar, we took the view that we were just going to breed from her. She was too important for David and Sue to... You know, we want to obviously massively keep this line going for their future breeding enterprise. And so we've sent her again. This is a really original mating. It took a huge amount of thought. We sent her to Dutch Art, which I'm delighted to say she is in foal to Dutch Art. And obviously we're praying she has a filly. It's that awful thing in racing, is that one's never quite satisfied. You can't just be happy that she's in foal. Now she's in foal, we want more.
Yeah. And then what are the plans for Snow Lantern, who's obviously taking very high order among the three-year-old fillies this season, and Starman, who looks like he should have more big sprints in him and is presumably an alluring stallion prospect to stud owners?
Snow Lantern is going to be either the Rothschild or the Nassau.
Mm-hmm.
We'll decide closer to the time. Having said that, the races aren't too far away. Sun Chariot, that's an obvious race going forward. Or the Opera. It's at which stage we step her up in distance. That's what we really need to work out. Starman's a horse who needs fast. He doesn't need fast ground, but he's at his brilliant best. And, you know, when I say brilliant, my God, did he look brilliant in the July Cup. And he needs that fast ground. And so I think we'd be looking at the Morris de Geest. I think the race in Australia, the Everest, is very interesting. Hong Kong, I mean, there's all kinds of options. But I think a race like Haydock, which historically has had soft ground, probably won't work.
And you sidestepped there, but have the stud owners come knocking yet for him?
As you can imagine, yes, there have been plenty of numerous interest, which is a very nice position to be in. But I think at the moment, David and Sue really just want to savour and enjoy the moment.
Fair enough. Now, I know there's a few other horses who are running well at the moment that you've bought, but I'm just going to hand over to James for a while, who's going to talk to you about some of your modus operandi at the sales, maybe.
Excellent.
Well, I suppose one other question to quickly throw in there. You mentioned some quite ambitious targets like the Everest and races in Hong Kong for Starman. Obviously, with a stallion career in mind, are you sort of mindful of making the horse increasing his international appeal?
I think the July Cup is an international race as there is. So I don't think those races, Hong Kong and the Everest, for example, are necessarily looking on that front. It's more the fact that you're more likely to get fast ground there.
Yes, as Martin said, onto the sort of sales process, I just wondered if you could kind of break down for us your approach to the sales, you know, the big sales where you get loads of big, deep pedigrees like the Orbi and Buck One. Obviously, with Snow Lantern, you mentioned you had a very specific order for a filly who could race and then potentially become a foundation mare. How much work do you sort of do beforehand on the pedigrees, and how do you balance pedigree work with physical inspections on the sales ground?
I must admit, I was probably going to sound very unprofessional, but I don't do a huge amount of pedigree work because you sit there really analysing the pedigree and going through it and looking up all of these ratings and writing them all down. And then the horse comes out of the box and in 30 seconds you've decided you don't like it. And you suddenly think, God, I spent 10 minutes research and wasting such time. So frankly, I do the pedigree research once I've decided I actually like the horse. So I do that at a later date. Obviously, I go through the catalogue and there's perhaps certain stallions, or if a mare looks very exposed or if she's very old, then I may eliminate it. However, I take an open view and really want to look at the horse first.
And from a physical perspective, what sort of things are you looking for when you have a kind of order like the two that led to you buying?
I think, there's got to be an athletic looking horse. It needs to look like a racehorse, you know, balance. I also like an attractive quality animal, has to walk well. I probably look for exactly the same things which everybody else does.
I mean, would it be fair to say these are things that are sort of blanket across the range, whether we're talking foals, yearlings, two-year-olds, horses in training?
Yes, and then it just comes to individual taste. Let's put it into human terms. I mean, who do you prefer, Kate Moss or Cara Delevingne? They're obviously both beautiful, but there's horses for courses.
Well, which do you prefer?
I'm a Kate Moss man, definitely.
I also wanted to ask you about the matings as well. I'm guessing you were involved in planning the matings that have resulted in...
Yes, I was. Again, sending Sky Lantern to Prankall, I think, was slightly a case of breed the best of the best and hope for the best. I'm not going to say it took a huge amount of working out. You know, we sent it to Dubawi and the Dubawi horses are winners, but they haven't been superstars, whereas Sir Frankel's been an absolute star. Sort of, you know, I don't know why, but that's the way it's worked out. With regards to Northern Star going to Dutch Art, yes, that was more, probably took a bit more working out. The reason why, first of all, I always like to send an unproven mare, a young mare, to a proven stallion, to give her every chance. Hence, we went to Kodiak first, then we went to Dutch Art. And then, obviously, she was by Monja, and she won over a mile and a quarter, and I just wanted to try and put a little bit of speed into her with Dutch Art, who, I mean, I wasn't expecting to put that much speed in, but that was the sort of thought behind it. And Northern Star, you know, was a lovely scopey quality horse, and Dutch Art was, you know, a more stronger looking type, and I thought I'd put a bit of muscle into her.
Ed, you also bought Primo Baccio for David and Sue Ward, lovely Ortad filly who won the listed Michael Seeley Memorial Stakes and was fifth in the Falmouth behind Snow Lantern. Actually had a little bit of trouble in running, I think. What's the plan with her?
The plan is to try and win a Group 1. She obviously has the ability to win a Group 1. I very much hope that's what we managed to do. I imagine she will, I'm not quite sure where she will go. That's really something for Ed Walker to say, but she could well stay in training. She's a lovely quality filly. Obviously has done incredibly well on the track so far, and let's hope she wins one of those good ones.
Right, you have bought Devious Angel, who's a really fun filly for connections. I know she might not have the same class as some of the other horses we've been talking about, but she's already won 3 for Tom Dascombe this season, which is no mean feat. Nice Cotai Glory filly bought for £16,000.
I love this filly. She's such a star, and every year Tom gives me the one plan is to try and buy the Lily Agnes winner, and we have done it previously. We've done it with a fun horse called Julius Geezer. But this filly here, oh, it was so frustrating. She just came up short, came second in the Lily Agnes. But obviously, as you say, she's run 1-3 times. She's got such a great attitude. I love horses like that, who are just so gutsy and really try hard, and very reminiscent of her sire, Cotai Glory, who was a very tough individual. And my God, he's doing well at the moment and has had a great start to stud.
And just finally, Ed, I saw David Ward tweet after Starman won at the weekend, and he was passing his thanks around the various Eds who work for him. He said, Ed Walker, he thanked for being the most brilliant trainer. Ed Player for bringing my hero Starman into the world. And Ed Sackville for just being Ed. What does he mean?
I wasn't really sure whether that was a sort of compliment or an insult, and whether I was the best of the Eds or the worst of the Eds. And so I'm going to take the view myself that he meant that I was the best of the Eds. But no, really, full credit should go to Ed Walker and Ed Player, because they're actually the guys who do the proper hard work. Ed Walker has trained the horse unbelievably well. God, he's been patient with him, and he's done such a magnificent job. And Ed Player did the most fantastic job rearing the horse at Watton Manor and building him into the horse which he now is. So I think really I'm going to have to be bottom of the Ed pecking order.
Oh, fair enough. No, you're too modest. Thanks very much for joining us. We know you're on holiday, and we appreciate you giving us your time. So we'll bid you farewell, and best of luck with the fillies and Starman for the rest of the season.
I don't want you saying that I'm on holiday. You know, it makes me sound very unprofessional. You know, actually, you know, here I am working away. So, but guys, thanks very much for having me on the show, and we will see you all soon.
Thank you. Cheerio. Bye bye.